10 elements of a compelling sales offer or pitch. So the big question is, how are entrepreneurs like us who have too much to do and too little time able to build both the business and the life of our dreams? That's the question. And on this podcast, we'll explore the journey to the answer. My name is Brett Ingram, entrepreneur and award-winning product creator. I chose to build a business and have a time for a personal life, and I want to help you do the same. Welcome to Optimize. So sales as a skill might be something that we love, or it might be something that we hate. I've known people that if they hear the word sales or they hear the word selling, their eyes light up, they get all excited, and they just love the whole idea of trying to persuade and convince somebody to buy something. I also know people that are the complete opposite. The idea of sales scares them to death. The last thing they ever want to have to do is try to sell anybody anything. And so we might have a love-hate relationship with it. We might have one very strong feeling or another. Very few people are ambivalent or neutral about the idea of sales if they think of themselves needing to do it. But the fact of the matter is, as an entrepreneur, it really is a required skill. It's required because we need to be able to sell anything that we need. We have to be able to create an offer, and we have to be able to be persuasive in getting people to want to do business with us, purchase from us, whatever. And so it doesn't always have to be sales in the traditional way we're thinking of it, in terms of we don't have to meet somebody face to face, knock on their door, and try to pitch them on a set of encyclopedias. It isn't necessarily that kind of sales. But as a general skill, the ability to take something that we have to offer, whether it's a product or a service or whatever it is, and be able to put that in a form and in a presentation in a way that other people would want to buy it, other people would want to be involved with it, other people would want to join the mission, whatever it is that we're doing, right, is super valuable and very important as an entrepreneur. Whether you are a Hollywood director or whether you are a CEO of a company, part of your job is sales. You have to sell the studio on the idea that they're going to make this movie. So even though you're actually in the business of making movies, you actually need to be a salesperson. If you are running any kind of a business, they always tell you you need an elevator pitch, right? Something where you can tell people in a really short, succinct way what you do. Movie pitching goes the same way. They tell you that you have to be able to have it down to one sentence to get the initial attention of anybody. And so sales are generally the idea of how we make the world go round in terms of business. And so the other interesting thing is when you think about partners at firms, whether it's a law firm, whether it's an engineering firm, it doesn't matter what the skill or discipline is. The fact of the matter is the partners are partners, not because of their technical ability, but because of their ability to bring in business, right? They're able to go out and get new accounts, get new clients. That's what gets your name on the door, and that's what gets you to partner level, because ultimately every firm is trying to grow, increase profits, increase revenue. So it goes without saying that we have to be able to figure out how to be effective with it, even if it's not something that we generally like. And the idea is, if we really distill it down, sales, what we're trying to do is create an offer. So an offer isn't just like our product. An offer is actually the full picture of how the customer benefits and what it costs them in or the terms to gain those benefits. So it's basically like the weighing of the cost. It's what you're going to get, and it's what you have to pay or what you have to give up or what the costs are on your behalf in order to receive and get those benefits. And a sales pitch or an offer, as it were, can be delivered in any media or method. It doesn't necessarily need to be face-to-face. It could be in an online web page. You're still comprising an offer and putting it together. It could be direct mail. I've gotten some very persuasive, amazing direct mail pieces that literally are all text. There's not even any pictures on them. And yet they were very compelling. It can be face-to-face. It can be over the phone. Any other way, it doesn't matter. The idea is exactly the same. When I was doing insurance, one of the things that we did is we actually had a pitch and we would have to go to people's houses. And so when we were doing that, our pitch was basically four single-spaced typewritten pages, and we had to memorize it. And the amazing thing about it is, while it was a script, if you did it right, they actually statistically had broken it down that you'd convert like 40% of the people, or 2 out of 5 of the people, for every house that you would go to with this, because that's how effective it was. But the reason it worked was not because it was a long script. It's because it had certain elements in it. And so I want to talk about the compelling sales offer elements, because a compelling sales offer effectively attracts and convinces potential customers to make a purchase. And so the best offers or pitches include 10 elements. And the more of the 10 the offer has, the more effective and profitable it'll be. The company that I had worked for at the time, they clearly had battle tested this thing, because it literally worked like magic, to a point that you could do the script. And if you did it well, sometimes I rode with people who didn't even do it well and they still were able to make the sales. But if you did it well, it really took care of all the things you needed to take care of. So when you got to the end, there were very few questions even left. They would just sign up. So the first element is a value proposition. Like right up front, the basic idea is, what are the benefits and the value that the product or service gives to the customer? If there are no real benefits, if there's nothing that the customer is going to gain out of it, or if we can't articulate what that is, how can we expect anybody to spend any money or sacrifice anything to get it? So while we may create a product that has a lot of features, what we need to really focus on is what the benefits are, right? How is the customer's life going to be improved? How are their problems going to be solved? How are their needs going to be fulfilled? So that is just the general core of what the offer is, understanding what the value is initially. The second element is the target audience, right? We've got to make sure that when we are pitching this, we're pitching it to an audience where they are the prospects for what we're offering. If I was selling a hair loss product, for me, it might work, right? Because I don't have any hair. So if I cared enough about that, it might be something where I'd be the target market. If I go to somebody who has a full head of hair, it doesn't matter how articulate the pitch is. It doesn't matter how polished it is. It doesn't matter how persuasive it is. They're not interested from jump because they don't need it. So there's no need, there's no benefit to them. So that isn't going to help. So we need to understand our target audience. We need to be able to identify that. We need to be able to hone it down so we can target it in a way where the message that we're giving is going to the right people. Otherwise, it's impossible to even judge the effectiveness, because the fact is, if we aren't pitching to people who have any chance of buying, then there's no way to even judge that. We want to tailor the offer to a specific audience. We want to understand what their needs, desires, pain points are, because when we're trying to put together the idea of the benefits that you're going to get, it's important that those counteract or balance out or fill the needs and holes that the customer has in their life and what they're trying to accomplish, or where they're trying to get, or what dreams that they've got, or whatever it is. And so that will help us craft the messaging that resonates with them. So when we have a clear idea of the target market and we have a clear idea of the benefits, the next thing is, and by the way, these 10 aren't in any specific order. It's not like they have to go in these order. But it's just important that all 10 elements are included in every offer or pitch. The third thing is a unique selling proposition, or USP. It's a big phrase that gets thrown around a lot. But basically, all it really means is, what is unique about our product or service? What differentiates our product or service from competitors? If there are other things that can fill the same need, why ours? Right? What is it about ours that makes it better? Is our guarantee better? Does it work faster? Is it more effective? Does it leave less residue? Whatever it is, right? There has to be something about our product. Is the price better? Delivery maybe is faster. Maybe the brand or the reputation or customer service is better. Or maybe we just have a fun atmosphere. So when you do business with us, you're going to have a good time. Whatever it is, it doesn't always have to be a specific product-related USP. It doesn't always have to be one extra benefit or one lower cost or whatever, but it has to be something that gives people a compelling reason. If you line up our own product and all of our competitors' products, why would somebody choose ours from their perspective? We know why they choose it from ours. We want the sales. We want the customers. But that doesn't get people to buy. They couldn't care less what we need and what it is about us. So what is the reason that they're going to buy from us or should buy from us as opposed to buying from our competitors? And the better we can articulate that and the more powerful that particular thing is, the better our results are going to be. So whatever makes it unique, whatever makes it better, whatever makes it special is all also really important. And it's important that the customer feels that and understands that, right? So it isn't just enough to be better or be different or be special or be unique. It's important that we're able to convey that in a way that the customer can understand it and that the customer is going to say, yeah, I'm going to deal with you because you've got the best eggplant parm in town or whatever it is, right? So that's the reason I'm going to go to your restaurant. So that's exactly what we need to be able to do that. The fourth thing is not glitzy or glamorous, but it's still important. It's clear pricing and terms, right? So while we obviously are going to, you know, make a pitch and there's going to be a price and there's going to be terms and things like that, it's important that at some point in the process, we offer up what those are. Now, we don't need to lead in with that. If we have a high price premium product and we start with the price, we're going to shut people down before we even walk in the door. So that's not a great approach. We want to sell them on the fact that they want this product, that they need this product, that there's benefits there that they can't get elsewhere. And then we can offer whatever the offer is. But it is important still to be clear and upfront. I know car buying is a very painful and unsighting experience that actually creates a lot of anxiety, stress, and tension for people, which is ironic because you would think that buying a new car would be something really exciting. You're getting this new thing and you're going to be able to drive around in it and it's fun. But the reason that it creates so much of that is because for years, the whole slant on the car buying and selling industry was that it's always a little shady. You go in, it's this long drawn out process. The person that you're sitting with hems and haws, they don't give you any clear answers. Then they've got to go talk to the manager. Once they know you really want the car and you've invested all this time, then they come back and they always have some offer or terms that aren't exactly what you wanted or not even what they said. Sometimes they'll tell you up front, oh yeah, we can get you into it for that price. Or they run a promotion where you see a really low price. So you go in thinking you're going to get that. And they're like, oh yeah, that's for the version without steering wheel or wheels. You wanted wheels and a steering wheel? Okay, then it's this price. And it creates a lot of stress and anxiety for people because it isn't clear. People don't know what they're getting and then they feel bait and switched or they feel hoodwinked because they came in with one idea and then they're ultimately faced with another reality. Thankfully, in recent years, there's been a lot of transition in that. And I have to actually say, when I bought my last car, they were awesome. I went in there and the guy said to me, here's the computer screen. This is what your payment will be down to the penny with taxes and all this other stuff. They were 100% transparent about everything. And I contrast that with a buying experience that I had at the same time when I was comparison shopping. Completely different models and makes of car, completely different dealerships, and completely different ends of the spectrum. Luxury car versus just functional like family car, whatever. And the irony, the funny thing is, because my experience was so much better in the one place, I went with that, and that's the only reason. I was going to go with the other car, but I went with that one because of the fact that the experience of being there. So there you go, right? Clear pricing terms. It gives transparency about the cost and in terms of purchase. It includes discounts, payment plans, guarantees, refunds, any of that other stuff. But what it does is it builds trust. And it makes the decision easier. When I'm sitting there and I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop where the guy's going to tell me, this is what it would have been, but now that you're ready to sign, actually it's going to be this, never happened. And so the fact of the matter is, I trust them. I had a great experience and I would 100% go back there again. And that for me, I could buy that model and make of car 20 different places, but I will go back to them for that reason. So there you go. Same product, maybe the price is even the same, but the experience was better. So for me, that's their USP, right? I'm going to go to them because that was my experience. The fifth element is time sensitivity or scarcity. We all procrastinate. We all want to put decisions off. We all want to avoid taking action or responsibility, and we want to punt and wait until later because it's more comfortable to do that. When there's a sense of scarcity or urgency, there's only a certain number of seats left. There's only a certain time at this price and then it expires. People then will be pushed to take action. When a concert date for Taylor Swift gets announced, it sells out in 10 minutes. Why? Because people know if they wait 15 minutes, they're not getting tickets. If there were unlimited tickets, it wouldn't sell out nearly as fast, obviously, because theoretically it couldn't. But also, people would not feel any rush to buy it. People buying tickets the day before the event, whatever, rolling in, same idea. As soon as there's a sense of urgency or scarcity that it's going to run out, then people run in. Again, if we look at the car dealership example, they run a sale, and then they run a sale the day after that sale ended. So everybody knows the sort of sales that they offer are a little bit gimmicky. But in some cases, when there are things and they are going to shut down or they are going to close, people will be motivated to move. And so they will be motivated to purchase. So limited time offers, limited availability, limited like bonuses or extras or whatever, encourages quick decision making. And it gets people that are on the fence but really want it to go do it, as opposed to getting distracted, going somewhere else, and we never see them again. The sixth element is a compelling call to action. And this is funny because it's something that seems so obvious that a lot of people leave out. But it includes a clear, concise, and compelling call to action that guides the customer on what to do next, right? Such as buy now, sign up today, get your free trial. This is really important. Even in the script that we used to use in insurance, when it ended, what you did was you closed them by basically saying, so which plan do you like better, or like whatever, right? There was some way you closed it where it assumed that they were buying. Because if you just get to the end of it, as compelling as it is, and you go, so what do you think? You're going to get a lot of questions. You're going to get a lot of hesitation. You're not going to get a lot of people saying, where do I sign? If you say, okay, so now all you need to do is click here to buy now, or sign up today, or fill this out to get your free trial, people understand what it is that they need to do. And surprisingly, it's very effective. They've actually done studies on this. And literally on a sales video or a webinar, telling somebody, click this link, go to the form, fill out your first name, your last name, your address and your payment information, then click the submit button to get started, actually has a higher conversion rate than just sending them to the order page. It's simple, but it absolutely works. So clear, compelling call to action, whatever action you want them to take. The seventh element is social proof and testimonials. This is very powerful because if we are the people that are benefiting from whatever we're selling or whatever our offer is, there's natural skepticism there because we benefit. When we start to include what other people are saying about us and what their results were with our products and services, now we add customer reviews, testimonials, case studies. All that builds credibility and trust because it shows that other people have benefited from the offer. And it also shows that they're willing to talk about it. So it isn't our words, it's theirs. And they're somebody that would ostensibly have nothing to gain by helping us out or by saying that they got good results. The eighth element is risk reversal. What we want to do is offer a guarantee or some way where we can reduce the perceived risk of purchase. The minute that we say, you know, all sales final, that's scary to people because they know once they spend their money, if they didn't get what they thought they were getting, they've lost it. As soon as you say there's a money-back guarantee, try it for 30 days. If you don't love it, you give people a free trial. They get to try it without even buying anything yet. Give them a product demonstration. Any of those kinds of things make it easier for the customer to say yes, because it lowers the barriers to entry and it gives them security of knowing that if it doesn't work out, they'll be taken care of. The ninth thing is a visually appealing presentation, right? So whether it's online or whether it's in person, we want something that has good design elements, images, videos, multimedia, graphics, make the offer visually appealing in any way that we can and help convey the message more effectively. So that doesn't always apply if we're in person, although it applies to the way that we look. If we show up somewhere in person, we want to look good. When I used to sweat during the summer when I was doing that, I brought an extra shirt in the car. If I got to somebody's house and I was sweaty, I changed my shirt, right? Added some cologne, stuff like that. So that way, I always looked better than I would have if I came in all like raggedy looking and stuff like that. So even if it's ourselves in person, but clearly if it's some marketing material we're using or other media, we definitely want that. And the 10th thing is clear and concise messaging, right? We just want to ensure that the offer is easy to understand. We might know all the technical reasons for things, but if we start getting into the technical stuff, we're going to lose people and we're getting into the weeds where they're going to get turned off by it instead of excited by it, because overly technical terms or complex things don't excite people, they scare them. And they don't have the knowledge we do because we're the ones in the company, we're the ones that with the product and we understand it. We want to make it very simple to understand and very accessible to our intended audience. These elements, when effectively combined and executed, they will create a sales offer that's not only attention grabbing, but that it's also persuasive and it drives the customer toward making a purchase decision. So the takeaway here is that we might love selling or we might hate selling, but regardless of how we feel, it's vital that we hone our selling skills to be successful as entrepreneurs. We need to sell our products and our services, and at times we may even need to sell ourselves or our vision to get partners, investors, and customers. When we understand the 10 elements of successful offers and pitches, we can improve all of our own by making sure that they're as powerful, compelling, and persuasive as possible so we can get the best results. Be sure to subscribe so you get every episode and share it with a friend. And until next time, remember, no matter what you want from your business and your life, don't compromise, optimize.